Blog Talk Radio.
Post-COVID mental health crisis, how African descended people have been impacted. That and much more will be discussed tonight on the Thursday Dare to Win program brought to you by Us Lifting Us Incorporated. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss this. We have a very special guest, Dr. Kinshasa Shabaka. And so we'll be having a conversation with her in just a few moments. Get ready. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night program, where we have a discussion of the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact method of gaining economic and political self-determination. We are building the global machinery for our economic freedom and sovereignty, and the methodology to pass it forward to future generations. Tonight, we will be joined, as I said earlier, by Dr. Kinshasa Shabaka, and I'll give you a little bit of her bio in just a moment. But just want to say welcome to Dare to Win. You may want to have a comment or ask a question. The dial-in number is 929-477-2789. You dial that number and then press the number 1 on your phone. That will raise your hand in the studio, and we'll come to you and receive your comment or answer your question. Also, you can go to our website, usliftingusinc.com, and there click on the Dare to Win radio program, click Listen Live, and you can come into the studio that way and participate in the program. We look forward to an inspiring and exciting conversation this evening. Let me give you just a little bit of background on Dr. Shabaka. She comes to us. She is a New York State certified licensed mental health consultant. She's also a Yoruba priestess of Yemoya. She was initiated in 1980. She's also a planet healer, the Noble Touch. She's 25 years professor, City University of New York. Faculty advisor for first African American student groups to West Africa. She created the first course in African psychology at CUNY. She created the first course in stress understanding and management that, again, is at the City University of New York, and presented African art exhibition, Thabo Kinshasa Shabaka Collection. She's a psychotherapist, a psychoanalytic therapist, a psychodrama therapist, dance movement therapist, stress management instructor and therapist, and the list goes on. Family, give a very warm welcome to Dr. Kinshasa Shabaka. How are you feeling this evening, Dr. Shabaka?
I am so delighted to be here with the group, and I want to thank you so much for asking me to speak on a subject that I consider very important. I also want to just give thanks to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand upon. Those things that they have done in the past, which has helped us to get to where we are today, is so significant and
absolutely
so telling in terms of how far we go, you see. So I thank you for asking me to speak, and I also want the group to feel free to join in any way that they want to make a contribution. They're thinking on this because I believe in circle teaching. By that I mean we're all points on a circle. Even in the university system, I was their nemesis because I would never allow them to give me a stationary row of chairs. We always had to make a circle because I felt that everyone in that circle has some knowledge, something they can contribute. So although I would convene the group, I felt that everyone should participate. So
absolutely.
That's the way I teach.
Right. We're all students and we're all teachers. We're all learners.
Yes.
You're absolutely right. That dialogical learning environment is what makes the difference. My name is Brother Anti, by the way. I'm a founding board member of Us Lifting Up. And so to get us started this evening, Dr. Shabaka, I understand you recently returned from a visit to the motherland. Tell us a little bit about where you were and any impressions or lessons learned that you want to share with us tonight.
Well, let me say this. I have been a traveler to Africa for quite a number of decades. I actually have to apologize because I did not make the trip this time. And I'll tell you why. Very simple reason. My checking account in two different banks were compromised. My money was stolen. Here's the thing about that. You know, I'll go next year. It'll be a rare experience for me.
Let me interrupt you just for a second. If you could speak directly into your phone, you're going in and out a little bit. So if you'll just talk directly into your phone,
is this the best way to speak? Can you hear me better this way?
Yes, yes.
Oh, fine. Very well. Yes, I'll hold the phone differently. Yes, so I did not make this journey, but I do have a substantial amount of history of traveling to the West Coast, East, and as a matter of fact, I've been to every country in Africa, so I still am able to be conversant on those aspects. What I was looking forward to this year was that my dear friend, Ambassador Joyce Adewumi, who is the founder of the African Choral Ensemble, she and her group, which I am a member, I had wanted so much to participate because this would be a different experience for me. And that is they were traveling and under the leadership of Dr. Baba Sola Atanda, who is a regional chief and who has done a considerable amount of work with the Nigerian people in terms of it's not repatriotism, certainly are being knowledgeable. The same way many Muslims go to Mecca every year or at least once in a lifetime, we as African people should understand the importance of our knowing our roots, our understanding of who we are. And we don't get it from the text here. I mean, you know how much has been eliminated and who has been responsible for that. So we don't need to have that as a point of our discussion tonight. But certainly, this group went Return of the Ancestors with the title and will be the title for next year. And I would love to invite every one of you listening and then tell your friends as well to please join us next August when we go again. As I say, I went with them spiritually, but I was physically present. And so that is comment on the group for this year. But Joyce and several others, a smaller group, was able to go, and they had a fantastic experience. They also brought back additional information on our plan for next year. So that is the situation there, and I am so proud of them and also very happy that we can look forward to an even larger group participation in 24.
Well, we certainly will keep aware of that and have you back to make that announcement when we get closer to that date.
All right, fine.
I'm curious, you have a background in mental health. How did your journey toward mental health get started? And you've had some spiritual experiences along the way that just give us a little bit of that background.
Yes. At 5 years of age, my parents noticed a proclivity toward being aware and very sensitive to people's feelings. I could see in a person, for example, that mama seems very worried. I wonder what is bothering her. Mama, that man doesn't sound right. There's something wrong about the way he expresses himself. There were things that I picked up as a young child that they noted, and when I told them that I wanted to be a psychologist before I could hardly pronounce the word, they said, well, Harriet, that was my birth name for Tubman. It's now changed, of course, when I married my husband. He changed it to the heart of Africa, which is the Congo, and Kinshasa being a capital city, so that's why my name is Tasha. But anyhow, I was very early of age in being sensitive and very much aware of the feelings that people had, their attitudes about life, the things that hurt them. And as we know, certainly from our history, that hurt people hurt and loved people love.
Mm-hmm.
What I am about is trying to help people to be mentally in touch with their universal humanity and to try to help them understand that mental health is actually a composite of all forms of health, your psychological, your physical, your emotional, your mental, as well as your spiritual. So that mental health is something that I have been interested in all my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, well, remember now it's going to be hard work because there are not very many black psychologists around. I said, I don't mind that. So, and so they started me off on a program at a very early age of learning more about what mental health was. What is psychology? What studying the mind, what does that do for you? In what ways can you use this knowledge to help people? And that was the trek that I went on with them, and they were very positive. They were very helpful. And when I went to college at 16, they thought that I would be a little timid about, exercising my free will. But I demonstrated that I was quite interested and quite forceful in terms of speaking my will and my thought. I think that I've been called on to help in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And as a servant of God, I want to do well, you know. And so they had me in the hardest English classes and the hardest Latin classes and the hardest this and that. And they said, because, you know, and that is another aspect of this whole thing in terms of mental health, they said, you know that you will have to be three times better than your classmate who's white because in order to be considered their equal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what I found out. And I really was three times better.
Absolutely.
So what happens is when they force you, your parents, say you will not take the regular English, you will take English X, you will not take the regular math, you will take this, you know, so forth. The point being that they really put it to me and let me know that I had to be very good to be successful. And that, of course, is a reality that even today we find to be true. And the whole thing in terms of mental health as it relates to COVID is very much the same program that we as people of African ascendancy have been treated in a very immoral, inappropriate, inhuman way. We have been given the the pig guts to eat when they ate the main part of the pig.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do? Now it's considered a delicacy. Tenders are considered a delicacy in the Fifth Avenue restaurants in New York. I'm just saying, it's a funny thing how we have been so creative as a people. We turn negativity into positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fantastic ability to do that. Take what is given to you and make something out of it, you see?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's a long answer, but that's where I got my start in psychology. At a very early age, I was sensitive to people's, attitudes and their manners and their the way they carried their bodies. I mean, all of those things I later learned in some detail because I studied movement, I studied drama, I studied speech, and of course, I think you may have mentioned that I have been the director, producer, and the host of a program called 1001 Ways to Cope with Stress. That program is now 24 years old. And every week, and it's a weekly program, I would have a different person on talking about the levels of stress in their, either their occupation, their personal lives, and how they handle it. Because I wanted to know. I want others to know the ways in which we can cope with those issues that, that face us. And that, you know, it's part of the learning and the constant growth. I think we never are too old to learn. I think that you can treat older people with new tricks. I think that we are as young as we perceive ourselves to be in the sense of youthfulness, in terms of ability to learn. And even there's certain age reversal techniques out here that we can utilize to make sure that we stay sharp and are able to deal with the different realities in a way that's very consequential.
Mm. Dr. Kinshasa, before we delve deeper into the post-COVID mental health crisis, I wonder if you would share a little bit of the path that led you to be a priestess in Yemanya, and also the product healing work that you've done. I think that would be excellent foundation for when we talk about the post-COVID mental health piece.
Sure. Well, I have always been a person who was curious, about life. Curious about why people acted in the way they do, curious about the phenomena of the environment, even the universe on people. Why is it that we act certain ways when there's a full moon? Why is it that we treat animals well or badly? Why is it that we feel inferior or superior or equal? All these things are questions that, that for me, have been the primary movement in my life. They are things that don't always have common answers, but certainly I have researched life and I have lived life very fully. I also think that when I was introduced to the Yoruba a culture, there was just something about it that was very pulling. I think that Yemaya, by the way, is the Orisha of the oceans, the waterways, the rivers. And that is the Orisha that talks about the flow of energy. Yemaya is able to move around obstacles, over obstacles, between obstacles, and even under and through obstacles. When you think of water and the fluidity, you begin to understand the power that is given in that regard. And one of the things which is key to the Orisha is that once you have been trained and you have been given these powers, one thing you must understand is that never is it to be used to hurt, but rather to reveal and to facilitate the growth of another person or another energy system, as we call it. Because we are actually all energy systems.
Mm-hmm.
And you want as much as possible for your energy flow to be positive flow. Now, we know that we know how upset and angry Mother Nature's gotten with us,
mm-hmm.
flooding the potatoes, the dents. I mean, it's like, listen, hey, y'all, listen up, you know, listen
mm-hmm.
up. Because where we have disobeyed so many laws of nature, where we have disregarded the feelings of so many humans, where we have tried to enslave the minds as well as the physical stance of people. I mean, those are crimes against humanity. And, you know, you got to pay. We call it karma, we call it what you like. But these are things that come into the realm of the Orishas. So why am I interested in it? Why did I get drawn to it? Because it has a pull. For me, I'm always wanting to know. And the more I know, the more I know I need to know. So,
okay.
So it's a constant, eternal journey, you know? And
yes.
I've traveled the world. I've enjoyed that. I have lived, I must say, with all gratitude and in full faith, a life that has been abundant. I don't have a sorry story about, oh, I came up in, you know, rural here and rural there, and I had it. I was poor and impoverished. It was not that way. My parents were affluent. But, again, I learned to see who much has been given, much is required. So I have worked hard. I have worked hard to return the quality of life that I've had because I want that for everybody. When I work with children, first of all, when I went away to graduate school at George Washington University, I frankly had no idea because I had gone to Butler University for my undergraduate degree in psychology. And so that was walking a mile away. And I had been in such what might be considered a rather protected environment, but then I want to tell you about how integrated the schools out there, you know, that's the bed of the Ku Klux Klan in Indianapolis, Indiana, I guess you may know. And so I was raised in that environment. I'm the one who went into the school system, the white school system, with my little green corduroy suit and gold buttons on it, to, you know, to let these people know we are every bit equal. But that was quite a that took a lot of energy. And a lot of tutelage from my parents. When I'd come home and had been insulted, when I, you know, been given a C when I knew I'd made an A, you know, things like that, it helps you to have parents. And that's one of the things that I want to emphasize in terms of this whole need for strong mental health. Our parents need to have a 20 to 30-year future view of what their child would look like and needs to go into that child to make them look like what they want them to look like. See, we tend to, unfortunately, because of our dire circumstances in many environments, we tend to look at only getting food on the table for tonight, and that's not our fault. That is the fault of a racist system that has systematically deprived us of our equality, has habitually taken from us what is ours. That's why I think we need to start a Sankofa movement. The bird in the Sankofa design is turning his head strong to the back, saying, I am coming for what has been taken from me. And so Sankofa could be a movement within your movement.
Absolutely.
And that is that we want to take back and what we have worked so hard for. We built this country. We were here before they were here.
Absolutely.
So we need to really be alerted to the real information, the real knowledge, and our real history. Because we have been, that's another deprivation. And that is we have been cheated out of knowing who we are.
Right.
We are a great and mighty people, and we need to reassert our beauty. We need to reassert our artistic talent. You know, you see some of these beautiful old Chanel's and old Vidon and all these fabulous designs. You know where those come from?
Yes.
Hello. Hello.
We do.
I mean, when you study your history, you realize they have stolen it from you, spit it back in your face, and making you pay $2,500 and $50 for a cashmere sweater. That, you know, it's just kind of amazing to me. If you know your history, you don't fall for the okie doke, you know? And
right.
I just find it very gratifying to have had the opportunity to travel and to know who I am within the larger human diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because once you travel and see the cultures, you start seeing your history that was taken from you. You know?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that is part of, you know, that is part of how I got into the Yoruba religion, why I've studied so many aspects of child development, as well as I studied for 6 years after my degrees. 6 years with Margaret Naumberg, who was the foremost psychoanalytic art therapist. She's dead now, but she taught me much of what I know about studying a child's art drawings and so forth. You can look at drawing of a child and see so much of the energy and how it is utilized, how it can be corrected, how it can be influenced, and how it can help that child to be a really, you know, full potential person,
mm-hmm.
you know. So these are the kinds of things that I have. Dance therapy, for example, I studied that at, you may have heard of, St. Elizabeth's Hospital. This was it's a well-known hospital out on the outskirts of Washington, D.C., 7,500 patients from everything from psychoneurosis to the depths of the deepest psychotic breakdowns. And we had to work with these people and help them to mend their torn, you know, minds. And
mm-hmm.
when you do that, you begin to appreciate the ways in which the mind is constructed and how it can be so easily distorted by the wrong kind of influence, by the wrong kind of input, by the wrong
mm-hmm.
kind of food, by the wrong kind of thought. So
we're
going to
come back to that point.
Yes.
What is a pranic healer?
Yes. Now, the pranic healer is a person who has been trained in certain techniques. It is a non-physical touch form of energy work. We are able to gain from the prana, which is the life force in the trees, in plants, sun, the moon. You literally can learn by, and I wish you would try this exercise. I'd like you to press your right thumb into your center of your left palm. Your right thumb into the center of your left hand palm. Just press it down and hold it for a few seconds. Now let go and now put the left thumb into the right center of the palm and hold it down. Just pressure. And now I want you to hold them out in a position of acceptance, meaning palms up to the air. I want you to tell me if you don't feel a certain energy vibration.
Mm.
Are you able to feel it?
Yes.
Okay. Now that's prana. And you get that prana, which is energy, from the trees, the plants, all living things have prana because it's a life force.
Mm.
So now you can use that energy to heal. And we are taught certain techniques of cleaning the auras. You may know about auras. That is what light that embraces your full body. And these are things that we learn how to do. And it's something that we can all learn if we will but do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of a study for me is part of knowing not just humanity, but knowing the whole universe. And that appeals to me because I bring that to the mental health field. And I bring that kind of energy to my work with children, infants even, young people, middle-aged people, all ages. And the thing is that in this whole idea of mental health, one needs to assert the importance of having a comprehensive understanding. I call it holistic, spelled with a W, holistic health. It's a way in which we look at life. You are broken if you have thoughts that are injurious to your well-being. So as you must well know, there are many people with broken thoughts. You see, the level of injury done to humanity through people who think ill of themselves and therefore project it onto others. I think that is the basis for racism. I think that when people see the genius of our species, it's a love-hate situation. I love you, but I hate you, so I'm going to, subvert you to being my slave, and I will benefit from all that you do. I mean, look at the patent laws. They can change one screw. My father, who invented he invented the heart rotameter, which is, he did research at Eli Lilly and Company, and for years worked there and invented the machine that measures the heart flow to the various arteries and so forth. Now, the white doctor who was in the same office asked him one day, Chris, do you mind if I, assume the responsibility for this research that you've done? And essentially, my father heard, oh, you mean take credit for it. So then he said, then what do I tell my grandchildren? You see, now here we have a situation, and this is the kind of thing that I have really plowed into throughout my life. The examples, because we have to pull them all apart and expose them. When a person tells you that you're inferior, and they're telling you that because they feel that way, it's called projection in psychology. So when we understand mental health, we know that we have to use that to correct a large number of the ills that have been done to our people. And then we get to COVID, and we get to the ways in which this disease, this virus, this plague upon the world has impacted upon us to a much larger extent. And why? Because we have been mistreated in the medical field. We don't get the same health services that whites get. We don't have the same level of education that they have. In other words, in every realm of human enterprise, from law, health, education, finances, economy, you name it. They keep us, they try to keep us down. A few of us break through and begin to perform. But then look at all those geniuses that have been lost because they were not accepted as equal. So you see, that's the problem. That's a serious problem. It's something I've been working on for most of my life. Most of my life.
Okay. Dr. Shabaka, let's do this. Let's take a brief musical break. And when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to delve into the post-COVID mental health crisis, and let you flesh that out for us and the solutions that you think will best serve us.
Very well. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Kinshasa Shibaka, a healer, a psychotherapist, and the topic tonight is the post-COVID mental health crisis, how African-descended people have been impacted. So Dr. Shibaka, help us to understand the scope of this post-COVID mental health crisis, the impact it's having on African-descended people. And you've already suggested to us that there are many tools available to us to overcome this. So talk to us about this concern that you have and the way forward that you would suggest.
Thank you. Yes, well, we know that COVID has affected, and this is the unique thing about this disease. It has affected the entire world. It has affected every strata of the economic, religious, legal, familial communities. In other words, you can't say that this was just experienced by the Latin population or the Black population or the white population. Everyone took a hit. Now, to that extent, and I am one who I'm a proverbial optimist. Everyone lost in that. Now, what do I mean by that? We lost family. We lost homes. We lost friendships. We lost organizations. We lost so much. But as the case where we have already been marginalized, already been treated, already been underpaid for jobs that we've overdone, this is a problem because it means that the mental health crisis is being more severely experienced by the African population than the other population because we were already treated with less appropriate behavioral models. We were already not given a fair share of the economy. No matter how hard we worked, we were not given our correct amount of financial energy, let's put it that way. So what happens in that is our crisis, our mental health crisis, is more severe. And you can look around, and no matter what city or area of the country you come, you see that we have been really most detrimentally affected. There are more of us who have been deprived of the economic, social, environmental, as well as the physical cures, or if not cures, provision for handling the mental institutions. Now, we know also that we have not had the kinds of money that most people have to get treatment. And they've now started having a program of having some of the celebrities who've been having treatment for years to come out and, acknowledge it because it has been helpful to the community, the human community, to know that, listen, it's all right. If you have a broken arm, you go and get it fixed, don't you?
Absolutely do.
Well, yes, but you also need to know that if you have a broken soul or that you're feeling like suicide or you're feeling like killing somebody, that too is a broken thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you, as a member of the human family, should get some help with that. Now, we never did, at least so far we haven't, gotten reparations. Every other community, from the Japanese, the Jews, and everybody else, they got reparations, right, for the things
right.
they suffered. Why have we not? All these are aspects of our being treated differentially. And I'm sure some of you have heard about the oaths that people take in some of these organizations where you are obliged to watch the lynchings and to make sure that they continue. That's your oath. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, lynching becomes very modernized. You can be lynched by being cut out of your job. You can be lynched by having your creation taken in the patent office by changing your school. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
So when we start talking about lynching, there's a proverbial term that can be used in a number of assemblages. So the point is that we need to be aware and we need to call it out every time we see racism raise its ugly head in every aspect. Because until we do, we are not going to get it addressed. And guess what? We're going to have to do most of the addressing. So that's why I am very impressed with what you are doing in your organization. But you go back to garbage. Look, buy black, study, create that, and benefit from that. The seven Kwanzaa principles. Look, those are really some pretty strong issues that they raise. And the point is that all these things collectively provide us with a solution to handling some ills to which we've been treated, or mistreated, whatever way you want to look at it. So that is my imperative. That is one of the things that I have wanted to address in what I do in my work. I think that we who have the opportunity, for example, when I went to the university system, I wanted to work with my people. I was going to use my energy to help us pull out of that abyss. So I was one of the first professors. Well, actually, I was the first professor in the university to take students to Africa. When the other students, the Irish and Jews, their motherland, our students had been so miseducated, they didn't know they had a motherland. This was it.
Hmm.
I had to teach them that, no, Africa is your motherland. You need to go there and recoup some of the energy, some of the beauty, some of the history that we have. You are a fantastic people. We need to know who we are. And that is one of the things I've always done. If I could be a psychologist, I want to work with my people. Now, a little irony there is I created this course at the City University of New York. And as you know, City University has 21 colleges. And I was looking at the College of Staten Island. And when we went to ask for our approval for our trip to Africa, they say to the students and myself, we're there, well, how do you know that's your motherland? I said, how do you know Ireland is yours? How do you know Israel is yours? How do you know Germany is yours? Okay. Now we got a problem, right? Or you little uppity niggas know something about yourself. Is that it?
The idea is
that we really must assert ourselves, make sure we are working with our people to get them to know who they are, their value, their worth in the human diaspora. And when you do that, then you can start talking about equality. But as long as they can teach you in fear, if you believe it, it works. If you don't believe it, it don't work.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a problem with feeling inferior to somebody. Because you know what? I know the basis of inferiority. And I'll share that with you.
Okay.
Dr.
Shabaka, I think we have a person that wants to make a comment, someone I believe you may know. Call it with the last four digits, 6093. Your line is open. Did you want to make a comment or ask a question? Call it with the last four digits, 6093.
Yes, thank you very much. This is Sister Nanana.
Greetings.
Okay. And greetings to you, Sister Kinshasa.
Thank you.
A couple of things. I just wanted to say that a couple of things. First of all, the transmission is sounding a little muffled, and so I don't know if that has to do with the phone, but I wanted to mention that to see if we could get a little bit better transmission of your voice, because what you're saying is certainly right on target for us. And the other thing that I wanted to ask, the actual crisis, the post-COVID mental health crisis,
mm-hmm.
How did this come about? What was the root or the genesis of this crisis? Thank you.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Thank you,
I'm
Sister
Anna. I'm wondering if you would want me to try to use my home phone. Do you think that would make the transition a little bit better? I have no idea.
Yeah, I tell you what.
I'm going to try to call in on that. Don't forget the thought and the question. I will get to that. I'm going to try my home phone and see if that would make it a little bit easier. Let me see what happens if we do this.
While you do that, we'll play some music real quick.
All right.
Family, don't go away. We'll be right back.
Who are dark of the blue? Don't let us hang around this town and let what others say come true. We're just good for nothing, they all figure. A boy's grown up, shiftless chitter. Now we can't hardly stand for that. Or is that really where it's at? We people who are darker than blue, we got no time for segregating. Let's talk about brown and yellow too. Hi, yellow girl, can you tell? You're just the surface of our dark deep well. If your mind could really see, you'd know your color. Same as me. Pardon me, brother. As you stand in your glory, I know you won't mind if I tell the whole story. No other way.
Okay, family, we're back. Sister Kinshasa is going to try to call in on a line that's a little clearer. And while she's doing that, I think it's clear to us, or it needs to be clear to us, that the reason that COVID impacted our community perhaps more than any others is a lack of power. And so we are challenged to build power economically. We come to understand power when it's exercised. It might be electoral power exercised at the ballot box, but it's the economics that control the ballot box. And so without economic power at the base of our community and our people, both here in North America and around the globe, we never will be able to be self-determining. So that's why Us Lifting Us is doing the work, building the economic infrastructure that leads to self-determination and sovereignty. And the key to that is for us to aggregate our money, that is, pool our money, and open cooperative businesses that are group-owned. In other words, this is not private ownership of the businesses and of the economy, but it's collective ownership of the businesses and the economy, and therein lies our power. I believe this is Sister Shabaka calling back in. Greetings, Sister.
Yes.
Are you back on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, that's much better. Yes. So Sister Nana had asked the question, how did you understand the genesis of the COVID crisis, and why that impacted us the way that it did, or is impacting us the way that it is?
Yes. Well, now we know that the whole thing in terms of how it started is still being considered. Some people say it started at a lab in China and so forth. The main thing we have to understand is that wherever it started and for whatever reason it started, it has hurt us more than it's hurt other people. Now, I'm not saying that that was the intention. I think population control might very well be one of the reasons. And we know that the billionaires think and deal with what they consider a position of scarcity.
Yes.
I deal with a position of abundance. I feel there is room for all of us. I don't think that a discriminate few should control life for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should control life for us. And therein lies the mental issue. Yes, the economy is controlled by those billionaires, but the mind control is the thing that is significant. A person doesn't have power unless you let them have power, unless
mm-hmm.
you give up your power, and unless you allow them to rule you. I could not be called a nigger because I know I'm not a nigger.
Mm.
But there are plenty of white people out here who are niggers. Do you
mm-hmm.
understand what I'm saying?
I do.
You have to really, mentally, you have to grasp what I'm saying because it's extremely important. Mental illness, mental incapacity is that your belief system actually is cracked, and that when you are mentally ill, something's broken. And why is it broken? If you are told repeatedly that you are inferior, who was the doctor in Washington, D.C. who wrote the book about, she came to my class, as a matter of fact, the class I started in African psychology, and she beat her breast, and she says, I am superior. Now, if a person says that to you enough times, you might believe them. But I would think they're crazy. Because if you have to say it, if you have to say it and beat yourself on the breast to say it, something tells me that you really are feeling kind of inferior and that you are wanting to have somebody believe that you are superior. Now, we've seen this over the last several years with this so-called ex-president. I mean, a bumbling idiot, but pulls people in and corrupts their lives as well as his own. My point, though, here is it is important for us to know truth from fiction. We need to understand what is real and what is not real. And there is a Dinkra symbolism in African art that is it's an interesting way in which the design goes, but it looks like two different oblong instruments crossing one another. And the saying is, be careful of the falsity. It looks very much like truth, like the real thing. You see, so we have to be, we really have to be articulate, and we have to teach our children to really know what is real, you know, what is real. So when you talk about mental illness and you say, and you talk about the origin of it, well, they're still discussing where this thing originated, this COVID. But maybe, we don't know, maybe it was for population control. Maybe it was for, you know, instituting a so-called superior image for themselves. I don't know, and I'm the first one to say I don't know. But all I know is that it's really presented a crisis for us.
Thank you, Dr.
A mental health crisis for us.
Thank you, thank you. And I think the main takeaway for me from hearing you talk this evening has to do with self-knowledge. Know thyself.
Oh, yeah.
Take control of our minds.
Absolutely.
Baba Hikima says so frequently that what we need is a sovereign psyche. To see ourselves as a sovereign people, and begin to build the institutions that will help us
reflect
to manifest
that
and realize that sovereignty. Family,
absolutely.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you again, Dr. Shibaka.
It was my pleasure.
We will be here again next Thursday from 9 to 10. Until then, we ask you to stay safe, stay strong, know yourself, and build the institutions that lead us to sovereignty and to liberation. Peace, family.
Peace and love.